99.9% of the stuff that you know about business is absolutely a lie. And as I tell you that, if people get the cassette, take the information that they don't believe and pick a few business owners that they know that are successful and ask them who's right, the people that have been whining for them or me, and you'll find I'm always right.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because I've been doing this so long. I've owned 200 and some damn businesses. In the last few years, most of the businesses we have purchased are between 5 and 10 million.
All right, we're talking to Art Hamill. I said I'm always on the lookout for marketing courses and for new stuff for the people who visit my site. Tell me, how long have you been doing this, and generally, what do you do? What do you do, how do you get into it, and what's the program that you've been marketing for all these years?
I'll tell you, back, let me see, I started in business over 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I was involved in business. As a matter of fact, I got in the real estate business because I was talking to some friends of mine in real estate that were handling, we were building buildings,
mm-hmm.
restaurants. And somebody was talking to me and said, are you selling any of your business? I said, yes, I am. I said, how do you sell a business? Because I didn't even know how to do that. And they said, find a business broker.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I couldn't find any business brokers. And what happened is they said, get a real estate license, you'll run into them. Well, I didn't run into them because at that time there were very few. And it's interesting because a couple of years later, I ended up teaching a course that many of the business brokers today, merger and acquisition people, got started in.
Right.
But it was not my intent to teach. It was just that a lot of people were coming to me and asking me questions about business. They wanted to get involved. They said, why don't you teach a class? And I said, my God, that would scare me to death because I'd never even given a speech or a talk.
How old were you when you started business? When you got into your first business?
The education part?
Yeah, like when you...
40, over 40.
So before then, what were you doing up until your 40s?
Buying businesses. I had worked for companies like IBM.
Okay.
And that's how I got to California. They transferred me from New York.
Uh-huh.
And I lasted about an hour after that, and I quit and started in business. Actually, I went into consulting business in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then my fantasy, because I took over as a general manager for a place down in Santa Cruz, was to have my own place. This happened to be a resort type thing.
Right.
And I ended up buying a Mickey Mouse little 25-unit motel in Modesto.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The freeway had passed by, so I was basically one of those mom-and-pop persons out there with a torn T-shirt cleaning the pool.
Right.
And it just so happened that somebody came by that was selling franchises.
Mm-hmm.
And I also broke my arm, and so I couldn't do anything. And about 3 years later, we had 25 companies. But they weren't startups. These are companies we had purchased from somebody else. The original person was a movie-type person that had stopped by selling franchises. And with that, we went into selling franchises with a company called Continental Marketing Institute.
Okay.
And from that, the franchises we were selling weren't doing a good job of promoting the product, so we ended up buying the parent companies.
Well, what was the franchise that they were selling?
Well, we had... The main one we had was a thing called Burger Barn.
Mm-hmm.
We had Buck 49. And we had another one was a barbecue franchise. I can't remember the name of it. It was from Tennessee.
So you owned that motel, and then you met somebody, and you kind of got into the franchise business.
We had 25 businesses about 2 years later.
Uh-huh.
I had four businesses that I started. And
mm-hmm.
the thing that was interesting about it, I was so tied into businesses, it didn't even dawn on me because later, as I was giving talks around the country, people that knew me from school would listen to me, and they'd hear me say that I got started at a certain time, and they'd always stay afterwards to remind me that, were you also in business back when you were going to college? And I said, no. They said, yes, you were.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think you were doing?
What were you doing in college?
Oh, everything from selling newspapers. I ran the Sunday daily newspaper stand at Penn State, which is a very big business.
Right.
But we also had a book shipping business.
Mm-hmm.
I was also in the newspaper business there also.
Yeah, so you were probably born very entrepreneurial. What about as a kid, like when you were 7, 8, 9, you know, teenager?
As a matter of fact, I never thought about it, but yes, I was. I can remember having a movie projector that didn't work. And what I would do is I would run the Western movies to it, this little rickety camera.
Uh-huh.
And they would, the kids would pay me a penny or something like that through the front of the magnifying. I know, but I've never talked to anybody about that. This should be embarrassing, but you know, at my age, who cares?
Yeah, who cares?
You know, we're talking about a lot of stuff, but the thing I always try to stress with people, it is more difficult to start a business than to buy an existing one.
Okay, tell me why.
Well, the main reason is the money, because what happens is if you go out and start a business from scratch, you really can't borrow any money. Number one, nobody wants to lend it to you unless it's mom and dad. And if they do lend it to you, the problem is you can't pay them back because you have no profit. If you go out and buy an existing business and buy it for a normal market price, you can finance almost the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't want to give people ideas that we're talking about 100% financing. Days we were teaching nationally, all the real estate programs are talking about nothing down real estate. Well,
mm-hmm.
In business, you don't have nothing down.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between 100% financing and close to it than nothing down. I don't think I ever remember meeting a seller with a normal good business that would let you in with nothing down.
Right. They're going to want something.
Well, it's not that they want something. It's them. You can, if you have enough cash flow, you can finance the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So the seller, in almost every case, leaves with almost all cash.
Let me ask you this. If I wanted to buy a business, and it's always been interesting to me, but if I wanted to look for businesses that are being sold, besides going to the newspaper under business opportunity, which there's so much BS there, where would I look? Where would one look?
That's terrible. Now, years ago, we used to go to the newspapers, and there's usually one newspaper, maybe LA Times, and maybe San Diego paper, which had a few in it.
Mm-hmm.
We used to then look in the Wall Street Journal on Thursday, but what's happened in the last 10 or 15 years is the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go on the Internet, what you're going to do is find more businesses than you'd ever think you'd ever want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
What you have to do is know how to approach them.
Mm-hmm.
What we try to do is educate people to the point where they buy something good. In other words, take your time, buy when making money. Don't be conned by what the brokers are going to be telling you, because the brokers are going to lie to you.
Mm-hmm.
The seller's going to lie to you.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have to do, and what we basically teach, is nothing magic. What we do is we take this mystery called a business purchase, and we blow the smoke away, blow all the garbage away, and you look down, you'll be able to see what it is you're getting.
Right.
And you buy it. In fact, we taught for 15 years. We sold those cassettes. We put together a one-hour program in Los Angeles in a studio. Two of us did.
Mm-hmm.
The other person was not in business. He was a well-known talk show host.
Mm-hmm.
So we sat down together, and the day before, we talked for 2 hours. He knew nothing about business.
Mm-hmm.
We sat down in the studio in Los Angeles, and 1 hour later, after they started to roll the film, we were finished.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't make one mistake for 1 hour. We then ran that on a major shopping network a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Between at 3 o'clock, the shopping network would go off the air at 3 o'clock, and from 3 to 4 they'd run it. Now you can imagine what happened to me all over the country. They kept seeing me in the airport, on the streets. You're the guy. I used to have a mustache. You're the guy with the mustache.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't remember my name.
Mm-hmm.
But we sold these cassettes, and we worked with the person that owned that. They're still a billionaire.
How many were you selling?
We were the biggest selling product they ever tried, or
mm-hmm.
ever used.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember the total amount, but we ordered them, I remember, 1,000 at a time. We had 1,000 in the order, and then we'd ship them.
Mm-hmm.
But tens of thousands of the damn thing. Keep in mind, in 15 years, we had 100-some thousand people go through our program.
Wow.
Also, one thing I wanted to mention, in 15 years of teaching nationally, we never had a complaint ever filed against us.
That's great.
Never. Now, I'm not saying people didn't come along and were upset, but I grew up in the old days back in the East Coast where it was known that the customer was always right, and I still believe that.
Yeah, if someone has a problem with you, you give them their money back.
That's right.
For whatever reason.
Why irritate them? I know. That's what we've always done.
That's great. So, do you have a lot of success stories? I bet you do, with the successes of people who got your course and they went out and bought a business and succeeded.
We have so many success stories we couldn't even put them all together, because at one time in Northern California, I also had a weekly TV program.
Mm-hmm.
We also had a weekly radio program. And then also, when I'd be like down in Los Angeles, KIV, I don't know if you knew Clay Schwartz.
No, I don't.
He has his own radio station now down there.
Mm-hmm.
The business, I forget what number it is on the dial, but every time I would go down there, I'd be in L.A. every couple of months. I would take over his show for an hour and a half or 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be the talk show host. And I'd bring people in that were success stories.
Right, that's great.
Yeah, and we got fantastic results. Now, there's a lot of success stories out there because we did something else that nobody else did. And this has to tell people whether it works or not. Nobody else has ever offered to help a graduate succeed for no charge after the program is over.
Mm-hmm.
This is what killed everybody that tried to compete with us, because people would say to them, well, Hamill will help us for nothing. No, we can't do that. Well, people would come to me and say, does this stuff really work? Well, it must work or we'd be out of business. And people will say, well, does everything work? I'll say, well, occasionally we have something that doesn't work, but it's not going to be in the program next time. But we haven't had anything since 1984 that we had to change.
Right.
We worked out all the bugs and all the great creative thoughts. I had to say, boy, this is so great. Let's teach this. And nobody could make it work. We'd have 800 calls an hour to the office on that, so that would come out in the next one.
Right.
But we removed the taxes, but we also removed the ones that were either too complicated or people couldn't make them work.
So you kept it simple. So tell me, when someone goes through the course in a couple minutes, what is someone going to learn from this course? If they're clueless, but have some clue about business and maybe have thought about that they want to buy a business or is it a good idea to buy a business, what are they going to learn from your tapes?
Okay, first of all, people used to come back and tell us all the time, it's like a brainwashing thing, because some guys would try to go out and do something, the wife wouldn't buy it or the grandmother wouldn't buy it. They would have listed the tapes over and over and over again. A lot of people would put them under their pillow at night. Because what happens is a lot of things in there we teach on financing, finding businesses, that people have a tendency not to believe. Because here's what happens in the business world. When you go out, you, your mother, whoever goes out to get an education on business, it's always from somebody in business that's failed or is failing.
Because mm-hmm.
a person that does well in business is not out talking to the public. A person that does well in business doesn't complain to his friends. I mean, I'm not going to go to you and say, God, last month was bad. I only made $100,000.
Right.
So what happens is you hear all the people that are whining, they're complaining. So by the time you hit a certain age, you're in your 20s, 99.9% of the stuff that you know about business is absolutely a lie.
Right.
And as I tell you that, if people get the cassette, if they take the information that they don't believe and pick a few business owners that they know that are successful and ask them who's right, the people that have been whining to them or me, and you'll find I'm always right.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because I've been doing this so long. I've owned 200 and some damn businesses.
Mm-hmm.
In the last few years, most of the businesses we have purchased are between 5 and 10 million.
Mm-hmm.
If you go around and talk to the business brokers in San Diego or L.A. or whatever, or any place else in the country, you're going to find that's the level of business we buy. They net between a million and 2 million. The price is 5 to 10 million. In fact, 2 years ago, we just finished in Mexico. We had 17 companies.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even speak Spanish.
Well,
I also am not very brilliant at running companies. We leave the management in there. And if you do that and you pay them well, guess who doesn't call you? In fact, if you buy a business that makes over $250,000, our general rule is the manager will be paid enough that he or she will be irritated if you ask them to call once. Why have them bother you?
Right.
Because if that much the money that they're going to be paid in a business that size, they have the ability to run that company, and you can be an absentee owner, because unless you don't want to be hands-on, unless you're letting somebody else manage the company under your supervision,
you're never
going to own more than one company.
Right.
And let me tell you something. Owning a business and being hands-on and having the secretary come to you in the morning and say, oh, God, I can't come in this morning, my kids are sick. Who the hell wants to hear that?
Right. I think that's one negative that people think about. Well, do I want to buy a business? They don't want to be caught up and be a slave of the business. So you're saying that you can teach people how to buy a business and be an absentee owner and structure the management where they're not bothering you and you are basically absentee.
A large percent of the people that went through our program not only bought a business but had multiple businesses. We had companies come back in and analyze that. So what happened is you own multiple businesses. But the key thing is, when we first started years ago, people were buying businesses making $10,000 a year and whatever. We started at $50,000, and people thought we were nuts. About 2 years later, we moved it up to $100,000. As we were finishing up a number of years ago, we were up around $200,000. Today, we keep telling people, minimum $250,000 net.
Don't buy a business unless you're making $250,000 net.
That's $250,000 after you pay a manager. In other words, if you're an absentee owner, you should be making $250,000
net after taxes.
That's right.
Perfect.
So you think this is a great large business? It isn't. It's a small piece of junk.
Yeah.
And they're not worth owning. Let somebody else own them. So what happens is, we encourage people to go out and start a business, build it up to a certain level, because I want to take it from the point where it's making money up to the next level, because it's not very difficult, because I have enough money to expand the business. I also have enough money, $250,000, to cover my mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So if I make a mistake next year, I'm not going to be in debt. That's the basic thing. And the basic thing is to take your time. And this really does work. This is not one of those pie-in-the-sky things. I'm a good example of how it works. And if you go out and talk to people that are in business, I think your friends are going to find, they're going to be surprised at the number of people that got involved in business because of our program.
And what else are you going to teach them as far as where to find a business? Where are you going to tell them to look?
Okay. Most of the ones that we have in there today were... all the sources that we use, I think there's 20 of them in there.
In the course.
Yeah, but at the time we put this together, we were not big in the area of...
Internet. That's fine.
And just taking one as an example, I'll give them a freebie, and that is Biz Buy Sell, BizBuySell.
Mm-hmm. .com.
And that's a great place to start. And once you do that, you're going to find there's all sorts of other ones. But just that will keep you busy for the rest of your life. You can't buy more businesses than that. And if people advertise there, I find they're relatively easy to work with, the brokers and the sellers.
So are brokers, how many business brokers are there in the United States?
I don't know. I think there's 3,000 or 4,000 maybe, or 5 or 6, whatever it is.
Are they all listing their business up on that Biz Buy Sell?
Some of them are just doing it on the local level.
Mm-hmm.
They have organized groups. In fact, the first group, all the business brokerage groups that you have today nationally,
mm-hmm.
came from a company called Certified Business Counselors,
mm-hmm.
which was formed about 25 or 30 years ago. And I'm the founder, and I was the first president.
Okay.
So most of these groups have come from that group. Oh, they all have, as a matter of fact. They're all, the people heading those up are all people that were in that group in the beginning when I was running it.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is they have their own multiple listings, like real estate brokers do. Right now in California, as an example, a lot of these now are trying to convert their local listing service that they're using for their brokers into Business Buy Sell. So my prediction is, because Business Buy Sell does a good job, they have a good program for bringing in brokers also.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be fine. Again, what we have today, we have more businesses out there listed by brokers, which means you have to get through them, okay? Because they're going to try to qualify you, make sure you have enough money or the wherewithal. In the old days, we had fewer sources of businesses, but we had fewer brokers. We had more sellers, actually, some.
Okay.
So what you have to do, you have to tell yourself, look, there are more brokers out there. They're going to make it more difficult for me to do it, generally. Once you find the good brokers, you're not going to have that problem, okay? Mm-hmm. They're going to be standing in your way. But the good news is you have 100 times as many businesses available. Not that they weren't there before, it's just that you didn't have ready access to them.
Okay.
All over the country. It is really easy today. And also we have financing today. We have all sorts of financing. We have all sorts of investors
mm-hmm.
that want to get involved with you. The key thing is to get off your duck, spend the time, find a business, and do your homework.
Do you recommend buying through brokers or trying to go around the broker?
Well, if you can find a broker to work with, fine. But the problem you have with brokers is they qualify you. There's a lot of brokers that are deal sellers.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, to be very honest, you're going to have to grit your teeth and keep going through the brokers until you find one that you get along with.
Okay.
As soon as you do that, they will feed you a lot of business. So I have very few brokers that I work with over the years because I find it's easier to go back to the same ones. And then also, when you get on their list, they're going to contact you just like yesterday. One of my best friends, Paul Hines, who's probably one of the best brokers in the United States, is in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And he just sent me another one because he knows I'm in the business of buying companies.
Right.
And this one, well, we used to have a rule that it has to be $1 million, but he sent me one that last year did $780,000.
Okay.
And I'm sure when as I talk to Paul, because I haven't talked to him, but I just got it off the fact.
Mm-hmm.
He'll tell me it's projecting $1 million. It's a nice company.
So tell me, what are all the reasons that you found over the years? Why does someone sell a business? Do you find a lot of people selling the business because they're losing money?
There probably are people selling business that are losing money, but that's the ones you want to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
You can make more money in a good business than you can in a failing business.
Of course.
All these stories they talk about doing turnarounds and all this crap.
Mm-hmm.
If you take the same amount of money, well, it's going to cost you less money to buy a good business than the one that's going to give you a headache.
Right.
Let the other people buy it. I would tell people, when you run into somebody that has a bad business that's losing money, give them big hugs. Tell them, as soon as you run out of all the good ones,
mm-hmm.
buy it. The ones making a profit, you'll come back. Because you don't even want a profit. You want a profit for at least 3 years.
Right.
Or try to go out and finance or bring an investor in, and you haven't had 3 years of growth or 3 years of profit.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to do it. They don't trust you.
Mm-hmm. So tell me some of your, just give me some kind of reminisce. What are some of the most exciting and businesses that you've bought over your career and some of the most profitable, if you want to share? Anything that just pops in your mind.
I have no secrets. It's interesting. If you took all the businesses I've ever owned, and you were to tell me that any one of them were exciting, I would laugh. Because what normally happens when somebody comes up and asks me what I've been buying lately, and I tell them, they usually give me this, oh, that's nice. They sort of like pat me on the head. I remember we were in the import business a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I've run into people at different trade shows, and they say, what are you importing? And I say, I'm in the housewares and giftware business. I tell them first I'm in the glass business. They say, glass? You mean you sell like glass? They put in the big high rises. I said, no, drinking glasses and canning jars.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I tell them, they turn on their heel as they were saying, God, that's nice.
Boy. How boring, yeah.
Yeah, okay, but most of them lately have been manufacturing companies.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you an idea. Let's take Mexico. We started with two wooden furniture, oak furniture plants, manufacturing plants in Ducati.
Mm-hmm.
We went involved and got involved in the ceramics business, making dinnerware in Guadalajara.
Okay.
One of the big products that we hit it with was a thing called Romer Top, the red clay cooking pot that they sell at Macy's and all the big department stores.
Mm-hmm.
Those used to be manufactured in Germany and in Portugal. I spent 2 years going to Germany and 2 years working in Mexico to convince the company I was tied in with in Mexico to buy equipment in red clay, which we didn't have in Mexico, and convincing the Germans that the Mexicans could produce their product.
Okay.
Today, for a number of years now, we've had that product, but we now produce out of that plant for the whole world.
That's great.
We then got involved in the electronics business. I was in printed circuit boards back many years ago with IBM.
Mm-hmm.
So I had already been involved in making printed circuit boards and doing SMT, which is mounting components on boards,
mm-hmm.
and electronic assembly. All three areas we had been involved in twice before in the U.S. We got involved in those businesses in Mexico. We were involved in the mattress business, mailboxes, etc.
What are you doing with mailboxes, etc.?
Helping with financing, right, and $500,000 to get them moving ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Mailboxes, etc., has its own warehouse in San Diego, as a matter of fact.
Right.
Everything is shipped in San Diego, and then they transport it into Mexico so that you don't have to go through the Mexican transportation system.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I haven't seen them in a couple of years or a few years, but at the time, the last time I saw them, they were about to take over the post office system in Mexico.
Mailbox, etc.?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the last one we worked on, I don't want to give out the name of the company.
That's right.
The company is in Mexico City. we had 60-some percent of the telephone equipment business in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, telephone, but telephone equipment, Fujitsu and Panasonic.
So it sounds like you're partial to doing business in Mexico.
No. I was trying to buy a company, a furniture company in L.A., and while I was negotiating with them, they asked me if I could help them finance what they had in Tecate, Mexico.
I got you.
Once I did that, the word got out in Mexico that there was a crazy American that could finance projects in Mexico. And from that, I got called to Guadalajara. And after that, every company I was involved with, their own down there, was from the original people. They were either friends of or relatives of the original.
Just all referrals?
Everything's been referral. I never got shafted. I never had a person in Mexico ever lie to me.
Mm-hmm.
Greatest people in the world.
They're great people.
And I don't speak Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Just poquito. Yeah. You speak Spanglish.
Probably.
Yeah. So are you're not teaching anymore?
No.
How long ago, when did you stop teaching or doing the seminar stuff?
God, I have an old brochure. That's the only way I can remember, probably 14 or 15 years.
Okay. So you're buying and selling just...
I don't really sell. We do it in streaks.
Mm-hmm.
We've had so many years, and I will get tired of it or bored because, you know, I keep doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And the problem I have is I never had a hobby as a kid.
Uh-huh.
So as I started getting involved in life, I found, hey, this is buying business is a lot of fun. But I had nothing else to go back to. So if you ever do get together with me or around me very much, you'll find that when we're talking about business, I'm very excited. I mean... Every deal I work on is exciting. I look forward to meeting new sellers.
Right.
Or selling their company.
Right.
Either brokers. And then going through it, it's very exciting, the negotiation part. It's exciting the first 2 months as you set controls up.
Right.
But after that, they're all the same.
Yeah.
I hate to say that.
Well, it's like, yeah, I mean, business is all the same. It's once a business is running, you're dealing with people, you're dealing with problems, you're buying and selling, you're selling. That's great. So, what else? So,
and if you decide to buy going businesses, I'd be glad to help you.
Okay, I really appreciate it.
As a broker, let me tell you something. I have people that come back from the program,
mm-hmm.
our seminar, every day. I get calls, I get letters, I get faxes, emails.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm helping them.
Yeah, I do the same thing. You know, people call me with my website, Hard to Find Seminars. People have a question. They're developing a product. He needs a headline or what should he put on the product, the retail countertop display to make it sell, and he'll send me an idea, and I'll send him an idea back. Anyone can call me from my website and pick my brain. Usually I'll ask them if I could record the conversation. I stick it back up on the site for all my other visitors to the site to benefit from free,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Well, I enjoy helping people, and I always say, even we were in the seminar business, they'd say, you've given us hundreds of thousands of hours of help after the class, which didn't really cover, wasn't really covered by what I paid going through.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of a gift, what can we do to repay you? And I said, look, the golden rule really works. What you should do is once you succeed, go out and spend the same amount of time helping somebody else.
Right.
Because it really does come back. I mean, for most of my life, I did not understand the golden rule until I started helping people.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden, I found it did work. And I'm not a religious person. That's not where I'm coming from.
Right.
I'm just coming from one thing. You can go out and get involved in business, not rip anybody off,
mm-hmm.
not have to lie to anybody,
mm-hmm.
and make a very good living.
And have a fulfilling life and feel good about it. That's the bottom line.
Nothing more exciting than owning a business.
So let me ask you this. You know, what I'm a student of marketing, so what I look for, if I was going to look for a business, one of the things I look for is a business that has a good history and who has a nice, large list of customers, and maybe a business who does advertising and is succeeding with their advertising, or maybe does direct mail, you know, direct mail selling and is succeeding that way. And then I look at their advertising, and then from my marketing education, I may be able to improve on their message in their advertising and literally double a business just through that.
Just keep in mind, that, just take manufacturing as an example, there's two types. One, you're working as a subcontractor.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, you have your own proprietary product.
Right.
I would make you a bet, if you went out and looked at a business that was real, in other words, you had your own product that was your company, and you were going to market it, the thing that you would find, you have the ability to take that product through the roof. You also have control over it. You don't have to go to another company and sell it. Now, there's nothing wrong with your type company. If you go on Business Flash Sell right now after we get off the line,
mm-hmm.
and start to look these up, what I suggest is go after all companies that are priced over $1 million so you don't get into the small ones.
Mm-hmm.
And although you're interested in advertising or marketing-related companies, just for the heck of it, go through and pull down all the ones that really appeal to you,
mm-hmm.
even though they're not in your area.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have found over the years, if I can get people away from what they think they want to own,
mm-hmm.
and just get them thinking about the net profit,
mm-hmm.
they end up buying something else and something they're going to be happier with. Now, everything is marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are pure marketing companies. Now, the good news is, with your marketing expertise, the amount of money that you will make for every dollar invested will be a hell of a lot more than it will be in manufacturing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of obscene, those service businesses. And again, down in your area, San Diego, Los Angeles, there's a lot of those companies available. And again, they come up for sale because somebody wants to retire.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's been in the business for 15 years. And even if somebody tells you they're going to retire, most people in business don't retire.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because it's too boring. You go out, you've made your money, you have money in the bank, you play golf, which lasts about a day.
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to own another company. I can truthfully say I don't know, I don't have any friends that I've known in business more than a couple of years that have retired.
Yeah.
And all of them have been in business many, many years, just like I have. I have no desire to retire.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I just want to keep doing this. This is...
Yeah, it's fun. It's,
besides, I have tried to go to these older groups where we have a lot of older people.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people I have found. These aren't business owners. These are people...
You got nothing to do.
When I was growing up in industry, or even after I was out of industry,
mm-hmm.
I never heard the R word, retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And as I did hear it, I kept thinking, the only people I ever hear talking about retirement are people that work for somebody else.
Yeah.
And I still don't understand that. Obviously, working for somebody else isn't very gratifying.
No.
Because when you're in business for yourself, that's all you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So you considered, well, let me retire, and you just go crazy. You miss it.
After we sold the business in Mexico a couple of years ago, I retired for the fifth time.
How long did that last?
About an hour. It never worked. Just like when I quit teaching seminars,
mm-hmm.
everybody said I was retired because people would come up to me all the time and say, hey, Art, how's it going? I said, fine. I said, how's the seminar business? Because that was the thing they saw.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever had a discussion with me on what else I was doing. So they'd always pat me on the head and said, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, when I quit teaching seminars and said I wasn't going to be teaching anymore, everybody said, he's retired.
Yeah.
I said, I'm not retired. I'm buying companies. They said, when did you start doing that? I said, about 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that when you're in the seminar business, everybody thinks that's all you really do.
Well, yeah, and they don't take the time to ask. I mean, if they thought about it, they'd probably realize that you're doing what you were teaching. You're buying businesses.
It's something that you may assume, but there's a lot of people out there that teach things that don't really practice what they preach, as you know.
Are there a lot of other people teaching how to buy businesses, like courses and such, out there? What do you know about your competition?
We had a lot of people come into the program and try it. We actually had a person from L.A. that copied our course completely. He brought in a tape recorder, which they're not supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out with a course competing with us. In fact, he even took the ad that we had in the paper
mm-hmm.
and just put his picture in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to go to court against him.
Did you go ahead? Yeah, so you went after him?
Of course.
All right.
You've got to be kidding.
Absolutely.
We used to refer to him as Darth Vader.
Darth Vader.
It's very similar to his name.
Okay.
But we had a lot of universities, USC, every university went in the areas we were in, tried to go into this business and compete with us.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't succeed. They would quit after a short while. We had the Geneva Group, you know, the people down there from Orange County.
Okay.
They put on programs basically for sellers. And then they decided that, they kept trying to get me to take the listings they had and get my students to buy them, which I would not do, because what happens is we had made an analysis of 50 of their businesses that they gave us.
Mm-hmm.
And we found they were overpriced between 2 and 300%.
Right.
And our people wasting their time.
Right.
But what happened is they got really upset with me, and they decided that they were going to go and compete with me, and they put the word out they're going to put me out of business.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about 6 months ago, or 6 months later, they quit and went back to what they were doing. Again, the key thing, we had a program that worked. I was very funny, and again, I'm not a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that I keep it light.
Right.
We usually keep the room cold.
Mm-hmm.
So that they know that if they doze, they're going to freeze to death.
Yeah.
And we give them follow-up help. I mean, how can you beat that? I mean, you say to them, look, suppose somebody was going to university and they were studying physics, and the professor said, if you're not doing well in your career, you come back to me anytime you want for nothing. You got to be kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever does that.
Right.
Well, we did it because people would come up, they'd have that look on their face. We don't know how to price the business. So when you look at our cassettes, you're going to see that we have the pricing, the first pricing program ever set up mathematically for pricing businesses.
Okay.
In fact, all the pricing systems around the United States today are copies of ours.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have copyright protection, but who cares anymore?
Yeah, really?
I don't really care. But there's a lot of people using it. But at the time, we had gotten the SBA and the IRS to use it. In fact, when I was teaching, we were an IRS-approved program. The IRS agents, we had two or three in every class because it was continuing education
mm-hmm.
for our program. In fact, the last 6-7 years, we were an IBM-approved program. If IBM people wanted to go to our program, the husband and wife were both paid. This was before IBM had all the layoffs.
Right.
I always ask IBM, I said, can I put that on our advertising? And they said, use it and lose it.
That's funny.
I got the message.
Okay. Tell me what is actually in the course. How many cassettes are in there?
12.
12, and is it there's a, some workbook material?
Yeah. There's a complete workbook. And what we did, okay, we tried in the beginning to take the class.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work. What we had to do is I had to go to the studio. And for days, I would talk to the wall.
Okay.
And the people in the studio were hysterical because they never saw anybody so animated talking to themselves.
Okay.
Which tells where I'm coming from.
I got you.
So we put it together, which gave us the quality we want.
Okay.
We also wanted it with such a sense that if you listen to it, it would motivate you.
Okay.
If you listen to it enough times, like faith financing, you don't believe you can get financing from the suppliers, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What we tell people to do is listen to the cassette over and over again, and eventually you'll believe it.
Right.
And then you go out and try it.
Okay.
And that's the key to it. And what will happen is you will succeed, because I've had a chance over the years. We have all these people calling us all the time. We did for years. So we know exactly how it works, because we always ask them, how's the cassette program work? Does it really work?
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take you?
Mm-hmm.
And what it does, it gives them courage.
Mm-hmm.
The cassette costs you X number, $100, but if you hire a business broker, it's going to cost you $50. So you save $49,000, I forget what it was an exaggeration, but
mm-hmm.
what we were trying to tell them, you can do it on your own. You don't need any help.
Right.
You can come back to us, but the key thing is to keep moving forward, to understand this really does work, you will have a business.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't get discouraged. And the other thing is, take your time, because how long is it going to take you to do it? It's going to depend on how much time you put in. How smart do you have to be? How much time are you going to put in?
Right.
We have a lot of people that went through our program, I'm not going to mention names, that don't even have room temperature IQs.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't the brightest people in the world.
Right.
We had the majority of the people didn't have enough money to put a deal together.
Right.
How do you put the transaction together? I said, okay, how much money does it take to go out and start one? You're going to be able to buy an existing business for less money than you can starting the damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you going to lose? I said, well, that doesn't really work. I said, why don't you go out and try it
mm-hmm.
and see if it does? And they always come back and say, my God, I can't believe this. The reason is we are telling them the truth about what's happening in business. All these other losers that they keep talking to that were in business or about to go under, they're nice people.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is they've done it wrong, and they pass all this crap on. In fact, even today, as I give talks around the country to different marketing groups and real estate
mm-hmm.
groups,
mm-hmm.
I'm always trying to tell them the stories, to give them all the examples, and have them nod their head, isn't this true, isn't this true?
Mm-hmm.
And I give them 10. Then I say, okay, Everything I just told you is a lie. Not one of these things is true about business. And so what I tell them to do, look, when you're going to go out, say I convince you should look for an existing business.
Right.
Take a yellow sheet of paper and write down all the reasons you can't buy one.
Right.
What you don't have. Take the yellow sheet of paper and put it in a safe deposit box or in your drawer.
Mm-hmm.
All the things that are going to go wrong, everything, put it on that sheet of paper.
Yes.
As soon as you get done, put it in the drawer. When you get your business, the first thing you do, you close, take the business or the thing out of the drawer.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find that all the 40, 50 things you put down, none of them come true.
They're all just fear.
They're fear perpetrated by losers.
Right.
There's all these people out there. And I've been passing this message on for years, and I said, you know, we have all these tens of thousands of people going through the class. If I keep telling them this stuff is true and this stuff isn't true, don't you think they're going to come back to me?
Right.
And say you're full of crap?
Of course.
I mean, but they haven't. The reason they haven't is
it works.
Well,
it works, and it's true.
I have no reason to lie. I mean,
yeah.
I'm trying to get them to go out and get by what they've heard.
Right.
Because the reason they haven't succeeded is because they're listening to the wrong people.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this. You've got the audio tapes. Over your course in teaching, did you ever put any videotapes together? What other teaching material have you put together besides this course that you still have? Videos, manuals, booklets, anything
Nothing.
Else?
Nothing. Now, we had other people teaching other classes,
mm-hmm.
which we used to have.
Yeah.
But over the years, I've given it back to them because they went off and taught on their own.
Mm-hmm. Are some of these people not teaching anymore?
I don't have any idea.
You have no idea. Do you have the masters to these tapes still?
Yep.
Okay. Out of the 12...
I think I do.
Out of the 12 tapes... within this course, you say you took out some of the irrelevant tax stuff. Out of these 12 tapes...
All the tax stuff.
All the tax stuff is gone. So in these 12 tapes, everything's still relevant today.
Everything is still relevant.
All the same. Business...
Keep in mind, I still talk to people all the time. I still ask them if it's working. Because when I'm on eBay and stuff,
mm-hmm.
I know somebody's thinking that. So what I'm trying to tell myself
mm-hmm.
Is this true? So I ask people all the time. In fact, I just sent an email back to somebody that wanted to buy the cassettes.
Yeah.
And let me give you an example. I use a real one.
Okay.
I won't give you the name or anything.
No problem.
Talking about he's working on a job in the United States, and they're going to move him. Other times people will write to me and ask me if it works because you're about to lose your job.
Mm-hmm.
So what I basically tell them... I've been buying business for over 40 years. I still use the same techniques I used 40 years ago. This program shows you how to blow the smoke away, which I was just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that came up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we offer them free help.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It'll take 6 months on the average, 3 to 6 months to find, analyze, and close a deal. And what I was saying to them, the last sentence is, please do not quit your job prematurely. Delay the move or make the move and quit later.
Right.
If you rush, you'll end up having to buy a business that doesn't work. So that used to be my nightmare when I was teaching.
Mm-hmm.
I'd wake up during the night, some person had called me and said, I took the class, I know this is going to work, I just quit my job. Oh, my God. Don't do that. If it happened, nobody ever told me.
Right, right.
It really worried me.
Yeah. Well, I can definitely tell by talking to you. I mean, you're passionate about it, and it sounds like an incredible course. I mean, I'm going to get one right away. And then, let me ask you this.
Sure.
Would you be willing to do this later for my listeners? And I think it would be kind of fun. Maybe what we can do is have everything recorded like we're doing right now. And are you pretty internet savvy?
I hope so.
Obviously you know how to put an ad on eBay and stuff. And maybe what we can do together is... go to bizbuy.sell and let's look through some listings together and kind of point out some good businesses that may look like a good business to buy and maybe potentially go through the whole process of buying it or, you know, kind of talk me through it as we're looking and what to look for.
You want to own it?
Yeah.
Okay, I would be glad to do that.
I think that'd be a lot of fun.
People, in fact, even in the last couple of deals I've worked on, I basically have brought investors in. I keep 51%,
mm-hmm.
usually stay 2 or 3 months, and then take myself out the backside.
Right.
Unless they're nervous about it.
Mm-hmm.
If they are, I will stay longer. Because in Mexico, I had to stay in all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't want to have, they didn't want to have to go to court to sue somebody. They always had me there. That big inspector, so.
Right.
But any ideas you have, if I can help you with anything, I'd be glad to.
That'd be great. That'd be great. Well, look, I'm gonna formally end this recording, and then I'm gonna call you right back, so we're off the recording. But look, to all my listeners, I hope this has been helpful to you, and I'll have some information on how you can get this course. And I want to thank you for taking the time and sharing this with everybody. I mean, this has been some great stuff.
It's enjoyable. I always try to get another person, just like I always say to myself, I'm on a plane. I do a lot of flying.
Mm-hmm.
There's always somebody sitting next to me. And when they are, I don't ever talk to them. I just sit there.
Yeah.
Every time somebody moves forward to talk to me on the plane, if we have 2 hours to go,
mm-hmm.
even though they're a key executive of a top company, I guarantee you, every time in 2 hours, I'll have them breathing hard, thinking about owning a business.
Let me tell you, I've read somewhere or seen it somewhere, the number one dream of Americans or of people is number one, owning their own house, and number two, owning their own business.
Well, I think everybody would want to own their own business if they didn't hear all this crap.
Yeah. There is
ears in the debt.
Yeah, you hear it.
I mean, why would you want to have a job working for somebody else, making X number of dollars, when you could run the thing and make a hell of a lot more and have less stress?
Yeah, what people need is they need someone like you. They need direction, someone to show them how, someone to hold them by the hand, and someone to encourage them and give them the confidence that and tell them that it can be done if they just give it a try. 30, 40, 50 years of experience is worth millions.
I'm on the outskirts of everything because all I do is buy companies. I don't meet a lot of people.
Right.
I'm not running up and down the street.
Right.
And so when I hear these buzzwords, a lot of times I don't even know what the hell they mean.
Yeah.
Like hands-on.
Hey,
I thought it was what I was doing, but I guess I'm not hands-on.
Yeah. They're thinking if you own the restaurant, that you're in the restaurant 7 days a week.
I hope you've learned a lot from this interview with Arthur Hamill.
In the following clip, you'll hear more audio recordings on how you can work with Art. Here's a question from a guy. He's located in Perth, Western Australia. The audio interviews, Art, are very inspiring and quite reassuring in the decision I'm going. I've been involved in real estate for over 5 years now, and the penny has dropped about 18 months ago that buying a business is the way to go. I've been looking at businesses seriously now for over 12 months, placing letter of intent and making offers. The problem I've had is the finance issue. Banks want too much security, and vendors are not very obligated to give vendor terms on a good business. So by the time you have done all your due diligence and business plan to put into the financers, you still end up pulling your hair out and coming up short. I'd like your idea about investors. I've been trying to get investors in Australia, but the investors are just too close-minded, or if you find them, they want too much of the pie to make the deal work worthwhile. I agree with your analogy with the larger businesses. Once you target the larger business with a good net return, there are less players in the market. I normally target companies with 30 to 40% net ROI, fully managed, and there seems to be plenty of targets on the horizon. I just need the capital and a little bit of guidance once in a while. I have a few questions for you. You mentioned you can organize the investors. One, would your investors invest in an Australian business or company?
The answer always is I was involved in 17 companies over 15 years in Mexico. Every one of those were put together with investor money from the United States. The minimum amount was over $1 million, and the last one we did down there was a telephone equipment company where we brought in $17 million. Here's what I have going that nobody else has going. I have a track record of 50 years in business successfully. Also, being in the seminar business, I'm also well-known. And when you bring the two of them to the table, it makes it easier for me to go out and convince somebody that has $1 million to invest it. Also, I have more money than they have. So they listen to me. I'm not saying it's easy. It's just that I run into very few investors that give me a hard time. But again, what we've done before we get there is we've done our homework. We make sure the contract makes sense. We make sure that the due diligence has been done. We make sure that the business plan is a $1 million business plan. In other words, you put together a business plan describing a business that will want somebody to put $1 million in. Yes, we can do it anywhere, because the other thing I haven't talked to you about is we finance a couple of things in the Far East. We work with a company. They own Singapore Airlines, and they own another airline in the Philippines. And they needed money in China. They were building Donald's-type operations. They needed X number of $1 million of investors, which we got for them. And again, when they came to us, we were basically the court of last resort. And I had gotten this from friends of mine in Hawaii, because we had helped them finance golf courses. I don't know if you remember, but a few years ago when the Japanese were buying everything under the sun, they were willing to pay $500,000 to $750,000 for golf club memberships in the U.S. People I was working with in Hawaii were also working over in Japan, and they had structured that. So it was a Japanese funding, Hawaii funding. We actually got loans on two golf courses, one in California and one in North Carolina. We have been all over. And, you know, I was in the import business for I don't even know how long as one of our companies. And we worked all over the world in that also. In that, the way I got a lot of customers, including in Australia, because we worked with a plastic company down there in southern Australia that made a plastic hard, very expensive, and we helped them get going here also. They came through the import side, but what I would tell them is, say, look, I'll get you a credit line if you'll do business with us for 5 years under agreement. So that's what I did in Mexico, and that's what I did in Australia. We have done that in a number of countries. And keep in mind, when you're in a country that speaks English, it is easier for us to do this, because I still have to go there. I still have to talk to people. And it's much better than trying to work through interpreters.
What fee do you charge for organizing the investors, and can this be added to the investors' borrowing?
If they need $10 million and I add my fee, the amount I'm bringing in is $10 million plus my fee. Now, here's what happens. Let's say they're giving up 48% of the company. With the amount they're paying me, they're probably going to be giving up 49 to 49.5%. Don't count on the percentage. All I'm saying is, all they're really giving up is more stock, because I'm going out and working it so they give up so much stock for the money they need, and then basically I'm bringing in another investor, basically, or a half an investor that's going to be paying me my fee. They don't pay any of that. Also, we bring in enough money for working capital. If they have attorney fees or CPA fees or bank fees, whatever else, that'll be included in the total. In other words, it's a package deal. It includes all the money required to do this in the business and for them. And we don't care how much it is, because the more they ask for, they're going to give up more ownership, that's all. And if they don't mind giving up more ownership, that's fine. Now, as far as 50% control, the thing most people have to realize is most investors are not looking for voting stock. They're looking for a preferred position. So if you're going to go public or something someday, they want to have a conversion clause in there to convert to common stocks so they can go public with you. But other than that, most of them want a preferred type stock, which means they don't have voting stock, which means you can bring in investors as much as you want within the limits of the cash flow you have. It's the most simple thing you've ever done, and although all of them say they want to work with me for years doing this, once they get the first one, it's done, and they're looking back and saying, Jesus, is this all there is to this? We have been doing this successfully, and again, it has nothing to do with how good I am. It has to do with they negotiate a good, fair contract. They buy it at a fair price or a market price, and they put together a good business plan. The rest of it falls in.
What sort of terms do your investors work with, a rough idea if possible?
They're not terms. What you're looking at is you're looking at equity participation. So somebody comes in, puts up $1 million, they expect to get a certain amount of stock. Now, the stock is basically worked backwards, and it basically we're giving them more return than they're getting now. If somebody had real estate and they were earning 10% on their $1 million, we can get by with usually 12%. If somebody's earning 3 or 4% on a CD, you can probably get by again with 20% above that. So the amount that we end up negotiating, or he would end up negotiating, is a figure that is above what they're getting right now. Because we're giving them three things to the investor. We're giving them more return than they get now. We're going to give them more growth. And the businesses we work on have comparable risk, so there's no more risk. So they have the three things that everybody's looking for in an investment. We also have 20-some years with investors of nobody screwing up. I have 50-some, well, let's say 50, I got to quit saying over 50. I'm making myself even older, even though it's true. These are all things they worry about. And the biggest problem we run into, you can tell every damn one of them, finding a business, getting by the financing, all this is crap. It's nothing. The biggest problem is they have to sit down or get somebody to put together a business plan describing the company and the whole thing. I can't go to an investor verbally and tell them something. Or if we have to work with a bank on a credit line, we can't do it verbally. You have to have a business plan.
All right, that brings me perfectly into the next question. What do you require from me to present the business plan? How detailed? Example, same as what you would give a bank or more in depth and detail?
Same thing that you're going to give a bank. The bank wants at least 3 years past figures. They want this year to date. They want normally 5 years of pro forma. And the key things in there is how well have you done in the last 3 years plus this year to date? That's number one. Number two is the management team. So when you're describing the management team, I don't want resumes in there. What I want is a good background of where these people come from. I mean, you can put down that they're the lead supervisor, that's fine. But I want to know what the background is. That's what the investors want. So they look, first of all, what has the company done financially? What does the management team look like? Who's going to carry it forward? And the third thing is the pro forma, which is the projection of where you're going over the next 5 years. And the thing that's important with a pro forma is if you're promising them, say, an income of $100,000 a year, and they don't see it in the pro forma, because they're going to think about staying 5 years. So they're going to say, okay, the first year I'm going to make $100,000. The second year I'll probably make $120,000. You know, they add it up. And as long as they're getting their money back over that five-year period, they're happy. And that's what they're looking for.
Would the investors invest in the Australian dollar?
It's something you have to address. We have ways around it. Tell them the Australian fluctuation or any currency fluctuation is nothing compared to what Mexico was while we were down there. In fact, just tell them on one deal we worked on, a $17 million deal I just told you about, I put that thing together in August of 1 year. We had certified audits from Price Waterhouse. The bank said they would take the real estate as collateral in the U.S., which is fine, but they needed to have the certified audits in English, in dollars. It took them from August until December 9th to get the thing converted. They charged these people. Now, this is just translating documents for 3 years. They charged them something like $75,000 or $80,000. I got the word on Friday that the thing was ready to go, which means I could call the banks and let them know, which I did that Friday, so we were ready to go on Monday. On Sunday, they devalued the peso 50%. I had to sign a contract with them. If I bring in $17 million, I get half the company. This is a company doing $4 million a year net profit. So what happened was, with the contract I had, I now owned the whole company. So I told them, as soon as you get the thing back up again, it took them until June to get the thing back up to where it had been. I went through that thing completely twice.
Is there any industry that the investors would absolutely not invest in?
Let's take risk factor. The worst businesses are service businesses. Most of the people I work with or know are manufacturing type people. Manufacturing people, businesses, if you took them along the base of retail, wholesale, or service, manufacturing business is a safer business based on the ability to sell products, not services of people. You don't have as many people for every dollar you take in. People are a pain in the ass, so service businesses are tough. But you also get them for a better price. You don't pay as much for every dollar of cash flow. But on the other hand, you're going to get gray very fast. Most of the companies we work on are manufacturing. Those are the easiest ones to put together. They usually have a lot of assets. So if you go in there, we bring investors in, and let's say buy it for $5 or $10 million. You own it free and clear. You're going to have a few million dollars in assets. So if something went wrong, you could very easily go out and hawk those assets in an hour. And once you have it set up that way, where you have no debt, you're going to expand out of cash flow. And even though you have the opportunity to refi assets, you never have to. It doesn't happen.
Is there a maximum business size that your investors will deal with?
The investors are dealing within their own scope. They're looking at $1 million or $2 million that they're coming with. We have had a couple over the years, three or four. But the minimum is $1 million. So that's what they're looking at. They're looking at their one small segment. In other words, we don't call all these people together. We work with them individually. Most of the time, they don't even know each other. I mean, they're stockholders in a company. And as long as you're doing well and as long as you're feeding the information back, they don't come back to bite you. And you don't have to worry about that, because if they find, he finds one in Australia that appears to be too risky, I will talk him out of it by telling him that we won't do it. If he'll listen to me as we go along, by the time we get down to the end, you'll find that I have guided him in a way that leads him into what the investors are looking for, what they're going to put $1 million on or more. Then it's just a matter of having a signed contract that makes sense, paying a fair price for it. By fair, I'm talking about market price, not stealing it. Because we're not looking about for turnarounds. We're not looking to steal a company. We're looking to pay market for it. And what you do then is you build it up over a five-year period, and then you can either resell it, or you can just cash out your investors and keep the whole thing yourself, because you'll have enough money by then to cash them out. My problem is, you probably realized it already, I have a tendency to over-explain. I was an old educator.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get this across. And even when I'm making a presentation at a meeting, a lot of them today will say, okay, you get up there, tell them the name of the company and who you are, and shut up. And they then go through the whole thing. They ask questions, and I only answer what they ask me. Because I have a tendency to then go off and...
This is a big thing. People, you know, when it's a big thing like that, and if they're passionate about it, they want to hear all you have to say. I think
that's why our first meeting is always an hour to 2 hours when I'm talking to them. Mm-hmm. And even though in the beginning they're wondering what the hell we're going to talk about for that long, once we start to roll on this and I start to take away some of the fears they have, so they always bring up all the things that could go wrong and all this other. You know, I haven't said this lately, but in the class, I used to always tell them the first day, I want you to take a yellow sheet of paper and I want you to write down every single reason you have not made it in business. I want you to write down every single reason you are not going to be able to make it now, why you're going to fail. Who's going to turn you down? I want 50 of them. When they bring it in the next morning, I said, look, you have these. I want, as soon as you go home, I want you to put it in a drawer somewhere or in a safety deposit box. Then after you close on your business, take this sheet of paper out, and it's going to dawn on you that every single thing that you wrote down never happened. And that's why people don't ever make it going into business, because they have all this bullshit in their head.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. I have no reason to lie to them, because when we get down to the end, I have to perform. I mean, we're not doing this for nothing. I mean, we have these fees we charge, but unless we accomplish what we say we can accomplish, we've done it for nothing.
Okay, here's a question in regards to, on the section, buyer must provide signed offer to purchase business contract. And he says, should this be a letter of intent, because a contract is binding if we don't get investors to fund the purchase, or the business, we will not be able to close on the deal, or is this terminology issue between U.S. and an Australian market?
Tell them we need a formal offer to purchase. Tell them a letter of intent is a problem, because first of all, I end up going out a lot of time, because what happens, a letter of intent is a point 30, 60 days before close. During that 30, 60 day period, the person buying the company is doing due diligence. Every time I have gone out and tried to do it for other people under this clause, you know, under a letter of intent that is not binding, the seller pulls out, the seller changes his mind, we find the information in there, and they end up falling apart. There's less chance of it falling apart if we have a contract, and we also know that there's very little chance that the seller is going to be able to back out. Also, for the contract, the seller pulls the business off the market. I'm not out there busting my ass. At the same time, brokers are working on it to try to sell it to somebody else. And even going to contract, we have problems with it. But the contract, at least we have something set in stone. Then the only problem I have is trying to get the person that I'm working with in Australia to go out and start doing some due diligence, because what's going to happen is you have a contract, and the contract will give you a month or two to check things out. I'm doing this at the same time. In other words, I'm out bringing the investors in, knowing damn well that if they find something that's really bad, the thing's not going anywhere. We have just wasted our time.
Rumor to meet with buyer at business purchase. Due to the logistics and distance of Australia from the U.S., how will this be done so we keep the costs and expenses in check?
Here's the problem. Unless I meet the buyer, the investors aren't going to be interested. Unless I visit the business and talk to the seller, talk to the broker, and not do due diligence, but do some checking. Just like we're not just doing it by phone, the investors aren't going to buy it. So they have a problem. Now, how do you keep the cost down? Well, the problem is, until I check it out, the expenses are going to go on to the day I get to Perth or whatever the heck it happens to be in Australia. And they're going to have to pay my expenses there. Now, once we get there, and if the thing goes down, and we then can offer them a contract for them to sign to pay a fee, and then we proceed, at the end of that, they will get all that money back. But they are going to have a charge on that, because I am not going to fly tourist class. So they're going to have a first-class ticket to pick up, which is not cheap, or business class, fine. Okay, the other thing you have to realize on these calls, I can't do this for $150 an hour and pay for the telephone call. Feel free to come back and question anything, because I don't want to get in there and find that they won't put the business plan together, they don't do the other, and they want their money back, especially after doing it for $150.
I hope you've learned a lot from this interview with Arthur Hamill. If you are interested in buying a business and fit the criteria that Art described in this interview, please contact Michael at 858-274-7851. That's 858-274-7851. Or email Art Hamill, ArtHamel, at hardtofindseminars.com. That's Art Hamill, ArtHamel, at hardtofindseminars.com. That's HardtofindSeminars.com.
You know, if you're looking for a product that you can really hustle, something that you're learning from all the techniques in, you may want to check out another website I have. It's called ID10.com. That's ID as in dog, 10.com. And what you're going to find out at idpen.com is one of my very first businesses. It's a business I started in my one-bedroom apartment when I had absolutely no money and I needed a product to sell. It's a pen that I manufacture right out of my house. I've been doing this for 10 years without any machinery or any equipment. I had a pen that I could manufacture for 17 cents and resell by the hundreds wholesale for $1.50 each. It's a product that has kept food on my table and kept the bills paid for 10 years, and it's an exciting opportunity that if you're looking for something to hustle, to use your copywriting skills or direct mail education, that it may be something you want to go check out. So go head on over to idpen.com. There at the front page, you'll hear me do telemarketing. You can hear me get sales right on the front page. It's fascinating stuff, and I'd urge you, if you're looking for something to hustle, to go check it out.